We are joined today by Stephen Sanderson, UCOG Executive Chairman. Stephen, you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm sweltering in this balmy summer heat.
Thanks very much for taking time out to talk to LSE Share Talk. So just to pick up on today's RNS, Stephen, the upgrade in the Portland Oil and Place, you've just got the new tech announcement through, but there's also a lot of stuff in the RNS.
Yes, well, we like to keep everybody on their toes with information. I think the basis of the RNS is obviously new tech's new work on the Portland in the Horse Hill discovery. The previous numbers that we'd released in May 2015, we had a total best estimate, sort of P50, they call it, the average really of the total oil in place contained within the structure was 21 million barrels. That was done by Exodus. Now, of course, you know that we had our fantastic flow tests in February and March, and of course the Portland flow was well beyond our expectations. It stabilized with a dry oil rate of 323 barrels a day. That was a record for any Portland stable flow rate in the UK, certainly in the Weald Basin. And the most interesting thing about it was, apart from the rate, which I should say was actually limited by the pump capacity. So it's possible that we, when we go back in, we'll design it to test what the absolute maximum rate is using a bigger pump. But going back, the most interesting thing, apart from the rate, was the fact that there was actually no water produced. Now, I'll try and explain in very simple terms, because I know not everyone's a petroleum geologist or a reservoir engineer. In this type of oil accumulation, the oil is contained in the pore spaces of the reservoir. The reservoir is basically made of grains of sand, and in between those grains, there's a space, right? Now, mostly in the subsurface, the sand, the spaces in between the sand grains would be filled with water. Most of the subsurface is filled with water, mostly salty water. So when oil comes into an oil field, oil being much more buoyant than water, it likes to find its way to the surface, so it migrates through the water in the sandstone and it becomes trapped. So essentially the oil builds up over time and actually sort of floats on the water, and the oil has an interface between the oil and the water, and that's what we call an oil-water contact. That defines the limit of the field. Anyway, when you produce a well, after a short time, generally speaking, you always produce water, because when you suck the oil out, the water level rises in the field, right? So actually, when New Tech looked at this, first of all, the actual composition of those spaces between the rock grains was filled with oil and some water, and the percentage of water was quite high. So we fully expected, just like Brockenfield that's up the road, that when we had a flow of oil from the Portland in Horse Hill, that we would actually start to see some water being produced. However, we tested this thing for 3 days or so flowing, and there was absolutely no water. In fact, we've got less than half a water bottle, a 1.5 liter water bottle full of water. So that was a big surprise, a very good surprise. And the implications of low water are mostly economic, in the sense that when you produce a field, clearly you get money for the oil, but if you have to separate the oil from the water, you have to do something with the water. Normally, unless you have a big project and you can re-inject the water where it came from in the subsurface, you have to get a tanker to take it to an approved environment agency disposal site. And clearly that costs money, so that increases your cost per barrel. So it has a big impact on economics. So if the less water you have, the more oil you have, and the more money you make. It's simple that your profit per barrel is generally much higher. So that's good in economics. Also has an potential implication on recovery factors from the reservoir itself, in the sense that if you're just producing dry oil, you have a much more efficient recovery than using oil and water per se. So one more thing before I stop and you can ask me the next question is, so we had no water, so it was a surprise. So I brought this to NewTek's attention. They scratched their heads and said, okay, well, we'll have another look at the petrophysical interpretation, petrophysics being you can basically determine the percentage of oil and percentage of water in those little spaces between the sandstone grains I described. You can also understand the actual size of, if you like, of those grains. So you can come up with an oil in place, you know, using the petrophysical analysis. So they went back. They said, yeah, okay. They took into account the water production, and that made them change their model. They changed some of the assumptions about the water, the content in there. And basically, what it's done is it's actually doubled the amount of what we call net pay. And pay is basically the amount of rock, the height of the rock within the reservoir that actually you can extract commercial hydrocarbons from. So before we had about 48 feet or so on their analysis in 2015. With this new analysis, bearing in mind the results from the well test, we have over 100 feet, so it's doubled that. But it also has the actual percentages of oil versus water in the little spaces between the rocks has increased. So, we now are looking at, in, say, the 1 square mile around the Horse Hill well itself, they calculate now, was it 22.9 million barrels in that 1 square mile. In April, May 2015, for the review that Exodus did, we were looking at about 7.7 million. So that's quite a big change. So that's very good for the oil in place in Horse Hill in the Portland. It looks like it's going to be a commercial field. We'll need to go back and flow test it for longer to see exactly what it's going to do. I'm very encouraged by the no water production because, as I said, that clearly has an impact on the economics. So I think it's time for you to ask me another question now.
It's free. No problem. So you're stating a 200% increase, but it's also free flowing. The well doesn't need much stimulation.
Well, no. This is the Portland is pumped. It doesn't flow under its it doesn't flow naturally like the Kimmeridge. So it's pumped using a rod pump, which basically just sucks it out a bit like a syringe, yeah. Really. We were limited by the pump size that we had because basically we weren't we hadn't envisaged that we would be, producing at over 323 barrels a day. I mean, with the max we got was about nearly 360, but we had to slow the rate down on the pump because it was groaning a bit too much. So, this is entirely unstimulated. I mean, we did use a little bit of dilute hydrochloric acid, which is pretty much every well drilled in the UK, almost on the planet, uses to clean up the cement in the perforations. I probably should explain what that means. If you imagine that the well is a bit like a big long cigar tube, and the cigar tube itself is the steel casing. Behind that casing is a layer of cement which bonds the casing to the rock. And then in order to get the oil to flow in the reservoir unit, which in this case is about just over 100 foot thick, you basically go down there and you put in shaped explosive charges, and they blow a hole through the casing. Now, obviously, because you've got cement in there, some of that cement ends up as being a bit of debris, goes into the rock itself. Cement contains calcium carbonate, component of limestone like the chalk cliffs of Dover. If you put acid on it, it fizzes and it etches it away. So what you put in, I think we put in 100 barrels of acid. Most of that is then converted to calcium chloride salt. Small amount isn't used, and that comes back and is collected and is disposed of to an EA-approved waste site. So that's what we did to the well. We pumped it, and we got the rates we did.
Like you say, that's standard industry practice, perforating the well in that way. Just to go under the Kimmeridge limestone zones. That
Yeah.
looks really interesting.
Yeah, well, I think the main point from the RNS is that clearly, the Portland produced higher than we thought, but had no water production, and the Kimmeridge was exactly the same. We got very high rates from it, 400 odd from the lower, and almost 900 from the upper per day, barrels per day. But again, there was no water produced. Now, again, I said to NewTek, okay, look, these are the results. They had all the test data anyway. You need to go back and scratch your heads, and you need to. We need to find out whether the assumptions that we had underlying the oil in place in the Kimmeridge limestones in the Kimmeridge and all the other deeper shales and limestones was in fact valid, because you have to remember that NewTek's analysis of oil in place, their petrophysics, actually forms really the whole basis of what we were trying to do in the Kimmeridge. I mean, it's their technology and expertise that basically led us to actually testing these zones and actually to say, well, there is movable oil in there that people have completely missed in the past. So it's very, very, very important, if not crucial, to for them to actually validate their prior interpretation. So that's entirely what they did, or exactly what they did. They went through and basically they looked at the results, compared it to their assumptions beforehand, and said, actually, yes, it's the model is actually consistent, entirely consistent with what we've seen. So that's really fantastic validation for the whole basis of what we're doing in the Kimmeridge. It actually says that, to be perfectly frank, I mean, their prediction beforehand was that the water that might be contained in the Kimmeridge limestones and the shales surrounding it is actually not what we call mobile water, free water, that actually, when you start sucking on a well, you can pull it out. It's actually water that's bound in the mineral structure of the components of the rock itself. It's what we call bound water. So it's bound in the mineral structure of the grains that form the rock, if you like. So that's very important. So basically, that validates the numbers of oil in place for the Kimmeridge itself, which I think we reported was 5.4 billion for the whole of the Horse Hill licenses, and it was a billion, almost a billion in place for the Kimmeridge limestones over the Horse Hill licenses as well. So that's very important, because that validates all our future steps, basically, because now we know that we've hit upon the answer to the problem. I mean, clearly, as we go forward, we'll have to modify the model, we'll have to add more data, we'll have to refine it. But I think it's people should be very comforted that that underlying basis for what we're doing in this type of new sort of limestone, Kimmeridge limestone resource play has been validated by NewTek. And they're, of course, they're cock-a-hoot, because they can pat themselves on the back and say, well, they got this one right.
Well, just following the RNSs, like you say, this year, they definitely have got it right. Like you said, I don't know what size chalk, I can't remember now, you were using on your original flow tests.
I think it's about half an inch, something like that. I can't
Half an
remember
inch.
exactly.
Just to push on a little bit, so you're going to look for applications to seek permission to do production flow tests in the three Kimmeridge limestone zones, plus the overlay in Portland. And you're talking about a flow period of up to 360 days.
Yeah, well, what we have to do next in order to move this towards, as early a monetization as possible, is we have to demonstrate that we can get a flow rate over a decent period of time, and we also use that to calculate what sort of volume. So we need to prove that we have an economic volume. Everything looks very good so far, but you have to understand that these tests were only were very short. Unfortunately, they were short because the existing planning permission that we had over the license, basically only allowed us, just under 30 odd days, sorry, 40 days of operation. So we pushed that to the limit. So now we have to come back and we have to go to the sort of the next phase of proof, if you like. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back into each of the zones and flow them for, days, weeks, maybe months, up to 90 days or so for each horizon. Possibly we don't need to do 90 days, but if you look at 4 times 90, that's 360, so it's a year. So that's we're looking for the permission to give us enough room to do what it's needed. Now, of course, hopefully during these tests, we produce oil. We can like at the last flow test, we can tanker off the oil and sell it. So hopefully we'll get some revenue as well. But we won't count our chickens before they're hatched. But that's the object of the exercise in brief. It's to go back in there to collect longer term flow data, and if we see enough, soon enough, then we can stop and move on. I think we're doing it for all the zones. We'll probably start with the Portland, and we're also going to test a deeper Kimmeridge limestone zone that we didn't test in the previous one. Now that we know that the upper ones are good, we think this one is another target. It's not as thick. It's 40 odd foot thick, but it looks very similar to the others. So all things being equal, we want to go in and test that one too.
Yeah, I'm just picking up on that. The two further appraisal development wells, and also the acquisition of 3D seismic data.
Yeah, well, these are all steps. You have to bear in mind that we've leapt a couple of the steps in the flow test because we basically really designed the original flow test to actually just test the hypothesis that there was, in fact, significant volumes of movable oil in these Kimmeridge limestones. So we didn't, I have to say honestly, we didn't expect them to show a commercial rate. We thought we'd have to go back in and drill a horizontal well to get any meaningful rates. So, we are where we are. We now know that we have actually commercial initial flow rates. I mean, more than commercial flow rates, really. As I think I said before in another release, I mean, we were looking at breaking even sort of flow rates from the Kimmeridge at about 350, 400 barrels a day. Our combined aggregate from the two limestones is nearly 1400 barrels a day. So that looks very, very good, and that's only from a vertical well, not a horizontal. So the idea is that we basically use these tests to actually prove, beyond doubt, if you like, the commerciality. And then we start the process of appraisal and almost development drilling. So then we try out what is the most optimum way of extracting the oil. What is the best type of well to drill? The one appraisal will be for the Kimmeridge well if the Kimmeridge flow tests are good, and that will likely be a horizontal sidetrack from the existing well. So that means we use the majority of the existing well, the existing cigar tube that comes down from the surface down to just above the Kimmeridge limestones, and then we'll just kick off at 90 degrees. So the drilling bit will be going essentially parallel within the limestone, parallel to the top and the bottom of the limestone. So the reason that you drill a horizontal well is because you get a much higher flow rate from the same reservoir with a horizontal well versus a vertical, often more than 3 times the increment in flow rate, between 3 and up to 10 times. Three would be a good number. And then, of course, with the Portland, if that's good, then basically we will probably drill just a Portland. Well, not really an appraisal. I call it an appraisal, but actually, really a production well. We'd really want to put that into full-time production. And probably have one tanker a day come in and take that to refinery, and that will give us some nice cash flow. The 3D seismic is, if we is really designed entirely for the Kimmeridge limestones. If we need to drill more horizontal wells there, then clearly we need to know where these horizontal wells are going within the reservoir. So the only way really to understand that properly is by covering the area in 3D seismic so that we can locate the wells properly, so that we don't miss the reservoir, or we go in the best part of the reservoir. It will also allow us to understand the faulting, which may or may not control the natural fracturing in there. So, but that's kind of a pre-development type of seismic survey, if you like.
Yeah, but it's getting more. It's very professional, because I remember when Horse Hill first started off, it was done on 2D seismic.
Well, it's still 2D seismic.
Yeah, but now that tells me you're going to target. So you're going to start targeting. You're looking specifically in certain areas, like you've just said, with the 3D.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be, sort of 50 square kilometres roughly over the Horse Hill area. So, we'll be able to site a few more horizontal wells correctly so that, we get it right. Because, those wells are reasonably expensive. So, you want to make sure that you put them in the right place.
And you've also, like you say, you've got Brockham about 4 miles away, and that's been commercial. What is that flow? 100, 150 barrels a day?
Well, I think the maximum it came on when it first started producing, I think in the early 2000s, was about 130, I think was the maximum it came on. Then it declined to 100 or so for a while. But currently it produces, but it's only 28, 30, something like that. That does respond to a little bit of what they call hot oil washing, because there's a little bit of wax in that crude, which builds up. So you have to basically flush it out with some hot oil, and that makes everything more lubricated, shall we say. A little bit of acid there also works in the reservoir. I mean, it's the same reservoir as Horse Hill, same age. Sort of geologically, it's slightly different at Horse Hill. And, of course, the big advantage at Horse Hill is that the oil is much lighter, in the sense that it's a much lighter density. And also it has a much lower viscosity than Brockham. So that means that it's less sticky, so it flows a lot easier. So, and of course, so far we haven't seen any water produced, which makes, the Horse Hill reservoir look a lot better than Brockham, actually.
Makes it look very good, actually, with no water.
Yeah, well, I guess if we just had the Portland on its own, we'd still be very happy, but, it's kind of the cherry on the cake, if you like.
That's great. Steve, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to LSE Share Talk today. It's appreciated, truly.
Okay, you're very welcome.
All right, thank you.